Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to Love Sport. It is the Get European Football Show. We're going to be with you for the next hour and a half. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. Plenty coming up on tonight's show. We'll be talking Newcastle's new winger, Alan Saint-Maximin, life after Antoine Griezmann at Atletico Madrid, a new era at Monaco, Moise Kean's move to Everton and Borussia Dortmund's Super Cup win over Bayern. Plenty of transfer news as well. Of course, just a couple of days left of the English transfer window. Who's going to be coming in? Who is going out? Who's going to be shaking it all about? All of that and more coming up on the Get European Football Show on Love Sport Radio and streaming live on YouTube as well. Just search Get European Football Show. Fellas, how are we?
Very good, Matt. How are you?
Very, very good, thank you, mate. I had to quickly rush out of the studio then, so I'm slightly out of breath, as you may tell, but we got away with it. Adam, let us know what's coming up.
Yeah, it's going to be a really packed show. We're going to start off by looking at the week's biggest stories. And I guess, Jez, one that really stands out this week in terms of transfers would be Pablo Dybala's proposed move to Manchester United. A swap deal with Romelu Lukaku going the other way seems to have fallen through. Manchester United supposedly not keen because Dybala himself wasn't too keen and also demanding astronomical wages. Is it the right outcome, do you think, for all parties, or could United have taken a risk?
Definitely, sort of, obviously, football ability-wise, there's no doubt that the Dybala could well have added something to United, but it sort of rings bells of Angel Di Maria joining United, and he was sort of pushed out of Real Madrid, possibly against his wishes, and never came close to his full ability for United. I wonder if they're sort of, you know, once bitten, twice shy in terms of that. Another talented Argentinian forward demanding huge wages doesn't really seem that keen on leaving Juventus necessarily. So it's a pity we're not going to see him more regularly in England, but you know, if it's to bring in someone who's not going to play to his full potential and really is going to have half an eye on returning to Italy or Spain during the whole of his time in England, then I don't think it's such a loss.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because it really underlines, well, two things. First, it underlines how far Dybala's stock has fallen over the last sort of 18 months, 2 years, when he used to be the sort of the darling of the club and he was the guy they're going to build their team around. And we talked last week about his sort of declining figures in the last 2 years. Obviously, the sort of emotional centre of that club has shifted away from him towards Cristiano Ronaldo, and perhaps he feels a little bit unloved. And the fact that Juventus are keen to make that deal for Romelu Lukaku, who, although was fantastic at Everton, has had a good career in the Premier League at Manchester United. He looked maybe a touch out of his depth and a little bit inconsistent, to say the least. And the fact that they're willing to make that trade was a surprise for me. And secondly, it perhaps underlines, you mentioned Angel Di Maria there, it perhaps underlines the declining reputation of Manchester United, or is it all opposed to kind of their lack of Champions League football? It's difficult to know which one of those two things is more important in this case. But he's not the first player to turn them down because he's not necessarily keen on the move. And 10, 15 years ago, that would never happen. You talked to Robbie Van Persie when he joined Manchester United. I remember him saying, you know, it was sort of almost like a childlike dream to go to Man United. They're the biggest club in England. And he went, and obviously that was extremely successful. For that season, United won the league with Van Persie as top goal scorer. So I'm just wondering where the issue is here. Is United's appeal declining, or is it simply just Champions League football being a lack of a draw?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think Champions League has to be the main thing. If they qualified for Champions League, I'm sure that they're going to attract a whole different level or calibre of player. They are still Man United, so I think they are, you know, possibly with Arsenal, but probably even more so, still going to attract good players without that promise of Champions League, simply because it's difficult to imagine that they're not going to start qualifying again within the next couple of years. But they're certainly not the team they were. Solskjaer, for all that he's kind of respected and liked as a character within world football, I'm not sure that he's yet sort of earned his stripes as a top class manager. So there might be a little bit of sort of trepidation there about joining, and they still feel very much in a transition period. You know, they've sold a couple of midfielders this summer but haven't replaced them yet. No one knows what's going to happen with Pogba. Lukaku's there but clearly on his way out. It's not a settled squad, and you can understand why top players may feel I'm better than this. And it's a very strange thing to be saying about Man United, but yeah, they have fallen off the, well, off the perch that Ferguson talked about Liverpool a few years ago, but they're not quite where they were.
For sure. I think it's a good situation. It's kind of worked out for Romelu Lukaku, because I don't know that, one, he would have fit where he fits into that Juventus team. I imagine there may have been some sort of discussion along the lines of him being the foil for Cristiano Ronaldo as much as Karim Benzema was at Real Madrid, and use him in a similar sort of way as a straight man almost. But again, I don't know whether that would have been best for Romelu Lukaku's career. Would he have played consistently? I'm not entirely sure. And it's possible he could have simply been used as competition for Ronaldo, and perhaps he would have been playing a lot less. And maybe a move to Inter Milan, which has been muted quite a lot this summer, would have been a little bit better. Okay, a club and not in a very different position to Juventus as it stands, but Antonio Conte's come in. I would imagine, given Conte's record over the next couple of years, that he will improve that team, and that the results will hopefully, from their point of view, improve. So maybe that might work out well for him in that regard. Moving a little bit further west to Liverpool, we talked a lot about Nicola Pepe last week. Obviously, his deal to Arsenal was finalised this week. And Liverpool, obviously, a club that was strongly linked with Nicola Pepe over the course of the transfer window. And there's been some reports with another French winger of far less repute as a similar sort of make weight to fill this gap in the squad that Pepe might have filled, with Bordeaux's Francois Camano. To me, he would be a huge step down from Nicola Pepe. What do you think?
The figure that's been touted is something like 20 million. Yeah, if you knocked a zero off the end, then I'd say, yeah, it's worth a punt for 2 million. But I don't get this move whatsoever. Or if it's true, I don't understand it whatsoever. Mm. He's shown flashes. I think he was originally maybe at Bastia, Bordeaux. He's certainly, when he was playing alongside Malcolm, he looked like there was the makings of a good player there. But he's never come close to fulfilling his potential. On his day, a relatively exciting winger who looks good cutting inside from the left onto his right, but nowhere near in the same class as Pepe. And this makes absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, the fee says it all, doesn't it? 80 million versus 20 million is about a quarter of the fee. I can see where they're coming from there. I think they've got Shaqiri, they've got players that can fill that role. I would be surprised if he got consistent minutes at all at Liverpool, if that deal does go through, but it seems rather unlikely. It seems to have sort of faded from view in the last few days. Before we move on, a bit of a PSG update. Some football was actually played this week, and we had the German Super Cup, which we're going to talk extensively about later on. And we had the French Super Cup as well. PSG getting revenge to some extent on Rennes, who they lost to in the Coupe de France final at the end of last season. Any talking points from this game? A good start for PSG for this season. Rennes looking strong ahead of their Europa League campaign. And an interesting situation with Neymar and a team photograph.
Yeah, I mean, the match itself wasn't a great match. I mean, considering it is basically a glorified friendly, it was pretty niggly. Mm. Probably both teams should have been down to 10 men by the end of the match. The main thing I took away from the match was that if PSG could clone Marquinhos and play him as centre-back and midfield, they'd probably be Champions League favourites. But as things stand, obviously, it wasn't their first choice centre-back pairing, but Diallo and Kehrer didn't look great together. Rennes are also sort of feeling their way. It wasn't their strongest team that they put out. So it's hard to draw conclusions football-wise. Off the pitch, or well, it was kind of on the pitch in the end. A lot of the pictures that came out from the sort of trophy ceremony were Verratti kind of pulling Neymar into the team photo and then Mbappe pushing him back out again. I don't know what there is to read into that. Mbappe did give quotes in the pre-match press conference saying how he's great mates with Neymar and he hopes he stays. The pictures look slightly different, but they're probably being misinterpreted. The fact is, the Neymar situation hasn't changed. He clearly wants to go. Barcelona don't seem that interested. PSG, I think, are being very canny. They're kind of saying, if Neymar stays, that's fine. We just want people who are prepared to play for the shirt. And yeah, if the situation doesn't change, I think it's Neymar that's going to have to do a little bit of grovelling and sort of wind his neck in a bit to win back his teammates.
you think he survives at PSG to the end of the transfer window?
I don't know if survives the right word.
Does the PSG survive Neymar on board at the end of the window?
As things stand, it looks like he's still going to be there, but I'm not sure anyone's going to be that happy about it.
For sure. An interesting situation that seems to have sort of stagnated a little bit. I can't see it. It'd be a huge PR disaster for PSG. They are playing a little bit coy because I think you're absolutely right, Neymar does want to go, but I would be amazed if they, one, sold him for less than they bought him for. And two, simply just it just looks bad. Just they when they signed him, it was this huge sort of cornerstone moment for the club. You know, a relatively young club, only formed in 1970, and not traditionally France's biggest club at all. You know, Marseille, Lyon, Saint-Étienne, Nantes have all been more successful and probably bigger support, more supported over the course of the last few decades. And it felt like they're coming of age after this QSI takeover, and to walk that back somehow, to go back on that sort of declaration of intent would be, I just can't see them doing it. It'd be a huge PR sort of disaster for them.
I think the only thing I'd say there is that, like I said, I think the way they've played it is reasonably good. Although Neymar's made all this play about wanting to leave, I think PSG, and certainly since Leonardo's been there, have kind of made it look like they're the ones in control of the situation, and certainly insisting on the same fee, if not higher, than when they bought him. I think they would save face, or they wouldn't lose too much credibility getting rid of him, because I think he's done a good job of sort of reducing his own credibility the last couple of years anyway.
Talking of reducing credibility, we talked a little bit last week about Marseille's poor friendly results, including losing to Accrington Stanley. You've picked out a few, we were talking before we came on, we sort of picked out a few notable friendly results that are somewhat surprising for French teams in the last few weeks.
Yeah, this French teams have not had a great pre-season in general. You look at Lyon, for example, they've lost 4 out of 5, including relatively heavy defeats to Liverpool and Bournemouth. Nice have had a horrific time. They lost narrowly to Cardiff, but since then they've lost 6-1 to Burnley and 8-1 this past weekend, albeit in a sort of two-hour match to Wolfsburg. Just overall, particularly against the English teams, although funnily enough, the one team that French teams have done quite well against is Arsenal. But generally, any matchup between English teams and French teams have gone the way of the English teams, which doesn't help those of us who are trying to end this sort of Farmers League reputation. I think that there's various ways to explain it. French teams do seem to have a higher turnover of players because so many of them move each summer, so there's an element of sort of bedding a new set of players in, but it's something that a few of those teams need to improve on very, very quickly with the season starting this weekend.
Yep, fascinating stuff, gents. Just an update from the Championship: Derby still winning 2-1 at Huddersfield. Huddersfield, of course, coming down from the Premier League last season. Derby reaching the playoff final, but an opening day victory, it would seem, for Derby at Huddersfield as things stand. This is the Get European Football Show on Love Sport Radio and streaming live on YouTube. Remember, you can just search Get European Football Show on YouTube to see Adam and Jeremy live in action right now. Up next, we are going to be looking at Newcastle signing Alan Saint-Maximin, the £16.5 million arrival at St James's Park. They are splashing the cash, and we're going to be talking about it after this.
Love Sport.
Yeah, this is the Get European Football Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. We are streaming live on YouTube as well. Just search Get European Football Show on YouTube. And if you want to join the debate, please do so. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that line as well, or send us a tweet on at Love Sport Radio. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well. Right, next up, we're going to be speaking to some French journalists, Adam.
We are, absolutely, yeah. Really interesting move from Newcastle, signing Nice winger Alan Saint-Maximin. Very, very interesting move potentially for the Premier League club. And joining me on the line to discuss that over the next few minutes is Olivia Sclavo, my apologies, from Nice Matin. Hi there, Olivia.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thanks, mate. What type of player are Newcastle getting in Alan Saint-Maximin?
They're getting a very exciting player to watch, very frustrating as well. He's the guy who can beat a defender quite easily, but he's struggling in the last pass or in front of goals.
Is there an issue coming into the club about sort of attitude and consistency? You mentioned sort of that he's a frustrating player to watch there. And there have been various stories in the French press about the way he goes about his business at the club, and that he's been a very sort of inconsistent performer over the course of his career at Bastia and at Monaco and now at Nice. Is there a danger that Newcastle are going to get a world beat 1 week and an absentee the next?
Yes. Unfortunately, it's as clear as that. You've got that exciting player. You can absolutely tell the potential. But unfortunately, he hasn't been able to really raise to the challenge in Nice, for example, when he was a bit on his own at some point.
I lost Balotelli,
but he didn't really raise to the challenge, and as experienced attitude problems, shall we say.
There's obviously sort of Nice-Newcastle connections. A few Newcastle fans are wondering if he's going to be the next Ben Arfa in terms of ability and or attitude. So how do you compare the two? Is it fair to say that he's a similar character?
You could say that. They are different players, I believe. I personally thought Ben Arfa was even more exciting as a player. He's got more vision, because he can play a pass, and I haven't seen Alan Saint-Maximin do so. I don't think he's going to be used as the same way. Saint-Maximin has often been played on the wing or as a striker, and he hasn't been able to really either control the game or really as a significant impact onto Nice's game this season.
Looking at Nice a little bit more widely, we were just talking about the French team's pretty poor record in pre-season friendlies and how Nice, the last two matches, my maths isn't great, but I think it was a 14-2 aggregate defeat.
Absolutely.
how do you place Nice, and how Vieira did last year and compared to, I don't know, what the prospects are for this year?
So it's been a very difficult summer, a very difficult season last season. Overall, it was the first year for Patrick Vieira in charge of a proper team in a top division. He has struggled. He had to deal with the Balotelli sort of file. And he hasn't been helped by the number of injuries that Nice had. It's very mixed feelings, really, for both supporters and journalists, because you've got the prospect of tremendous wealth with Jim Ratcliffe buying the club and therefore pumping money into the club. Unfortunately, the situation at the club at the moment is very unclear, as all the transfer window is getting to a close, and no signing has been made so far. Because of that, Ratcliffe sort of taking over, not being finalised yet. So we have a team that is very mid-table levels and need absolute improvement. And we're waiting for that. So we don't really know what the team will look like. If it stands as it is, last year's seventh position was good for what we saw. This year would be difficult to match that if that remains as it is.
With this sort of coming season, you mentioned the turmoil at the club there. Is there a fear that this season could end terribly if the deal for the takeover doesn't go through in time before the end of the window? And you mentioned the lack of signings, and that doesn't improve. Is there a situation where when Nice are fighting relegation this season? Because last season, Saint-Maximin was one of their key threats. They didn't score many goals. Patrick Vieira organised a very defensive and solid team, but one that was functional rather than attractive to watch. Is there a situation that without Saint-Maximin and without those signings that they're struggling at the bottom of the table?
I'm not sure. I don't see Nice as a potential sort of going into the second division. I think there's worse team than Nice. So I think that's sort of a good hope mattress, let's say. I think if we don't get the signings before the end of the transfer window in the summer, there will be more signings in the winter, and therefore I think Nice is safe. But this year will be very difficult on many levels. Obviously, people want to keep Patrick Vieira and keep as much sort of a solidity in the club for the project to kick start with Jim Ratcliffe coming in.
I think Vieira did a massively underrated job last year, finishing seventh.
Absolutely.
With basically no centre forward all season. Is there a concern amongst Nice supporters that you say Nice are safe, but is he safe? But are you safe from losing him? I guess because you know he is a popular man, a popular coach already. Could he sort of tire of the situation and walk?
Absolutely. And that has been the talk. He said that he is going to stay. He's going to stay this season, but he has been very much disappointed in the president, in the former president, who is Jean-Pierre Rivère, who made him come to Nice and then left the club. So we're talking about this president coming back with the Jim Ratcliffe project, and therefore Patrick Vieira has put a clause in his contract, because he's renewed his contract, and he's put a clause saying if those guys are coming back into the club, he's holding the possibility to leave with the remaining of his contract and just like walk out of the club if he's not happy with the way the club is managed again.
How likely is the takeover? You sort of mentioned it a couple of times with Jim Ratcliffe looking to buy the club, but it's something that's been mooted for quite some time and hasn't quite got over the line yet. As you mentioned, there's talk of Fournier and Rivière returning. How likely is that to pass? Is there a situation where Ratcliffe doesn't buy the club and it falls through? Where are we at with negotiations and the signing of this deal?
Negotiations are, I think, done. I think we can say that the club is there. It really is the last hurdles that the club needs to pass in terms of the administrative formalities. Really, it's sort of done. Last papers need to be signed, and the former sort of American Chinese investors needs to just go and leave the new team getting in. It is a matter of like really weeks. We're waiting that. We've like everyone is really, really waiting for it to kick start so Nice season can actually start.
Yeah, it's a really interesting situation. Olivier Sclavo of Nice Martin, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers. And Alain Saint-Maximin. Really interesting signing. There's a sort of a disagreement a little bit at GFFN Towers over his potential and his ability and his impact on the Nice team and his impact on games. I'm in the camp that I think he's a really good player. Yes, inconsistent. Yes, sometimes he does have games where he sort of drops off the map a little bit. But if you look at last season as a whole, I think he was a very positive influence on the team. One of their top goal scorers, didn't get too many, but they're a very defensive side. And on his day, he's absolutely fantastic. And there is that comparison with Ben Arfa. Quick, direct, pacey, skillful, and younger as well. He's got a long way to develop. It's whether he can make that step up to the Premier League, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Sam Maximin fan.
Yeah.
As a neutral, I think he's one of the best players to watch because, yeah, he's quick, he's skillful, as you said, and he's equally frustrating. So as long as you don't care, he's always good entertainment. But I'm not sure I'd want him playing for my team, really. I use it as a sort of disparaging comparison. Not everyone would agree there either. But to me, he's a little bit of a Walcott in that he's got the pace, he's got the skills, but he never seems to be on any kind of learning curve. And yeah, I think last year there were sort of relatively mitigating circumstances because a lot of the goal-scoring onus at Nice fell on him, and it shouldn't have been. His job's supposed to be to provide the goals, not to score them. But still, even if you discount that, for France under 21s as well, there's been a couple of attitude problems. And I think until he sorts his head out, there's lots of talk about the Gucci headband that he wears. It's probably good for sales at Newcastle, and maybe they'll make some money back on that. But it's the Gucci headband maybe is kind of symbolic of where he's at. We need a bit less flash and a bit more substance.
Yeah, there definitely is the case. And I think at Nice, when Lucien Favre was there, there was a period where he definitely told him to simplify his game, because he sometimes over-elaborates, probably, you know, takes on one too many men. And there are some games where he was devastating. They beat Monaco 4-0, I seem to remember. He was actually fantastic in that game. Brilliant, the game, I think it was last season away at Nantes, where he won it on his own, that game. So there is a really good player in there. One thing that Olivier touched on very briefly there was the takeover. I think it's something that Nice fans will have to follow very closely, because if they can get to a situation where Radcliffe buys the club, you know, much more financial clout, and they get Fournier and Riviere, who ran the club extremely successfully for a few years previously, before they were sort of forced out by new ownership, which now seems to be on its way out too. That would be huge for the club. I think there's a group of players that perhaps some of them end up at Fulham, like Maxime Lamarchand. They signed a number of players for sort of 5 or 6 million. There's a group of them, and they end up selling them for over 100. They're fantastic in the transfer market and extremely astute managing director and president. And if they can, that would be the best signing for them this summer, if they can get them back.
They've been a very well-run club for a few years now, but even Ganago under the new ownership hasn't done too badly. And you know, the most important person in that club at the moment, I'd say, is Vieira. Mm. It was amazing what he did last year to finish so high with no real attack to speak of. The concern is that in this 8-1 defeat this weekend, it was a strong defence that was being played. And last year, their success was based on that defence. Mm. The ownership thing needs to be sorted as soon as possible to give them a fighting chance to bring anyone in. Because, as Olivier said, they could always bring people in January, but I don't know what position they could be in by then. It might be irretrievable. Mm.
Yep, Alan Saint-Maximin joining Joel Linton at St James's Park this summer. Summer spending up to about £56 million for Newcastle. Quite unbelievable what Mike Ashley is doing. And also acquired Jack Wills today. Not a player, a clothing brand. £13 million that one cost. Next, we are going to be moving to La Liga and discussing life at Atletico Madrid post the splendidly coiffured Antoine Griezmann.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Get European Football Show on Love Sport with the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith, joining me, Matt Beadle, through to 10:30 this evening. We are streaming live on YouTube. If you want to watch the guys in live action, just search Get European Football Show on YouTube. And if you want to join the debate, get in touch with us, 0208 7020 558, or on the socials, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. Chaps, it's La Liga next.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah, really interesting season coming up at Atletico Madrid. No Antoine Griezmann, a potentially pivotal season for Diego Simeone. And to discuss that on the line is Chris Winterburn of Marca English. Hi there, Chris.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks, mate. First, I'd love to get your thoughts on the Griezmann situation. Given how pivotal he's been for Atleti in the last few years, is there a sense that the club has lost its sort of emotional centre? Can they move on from this loss of Griezmann, their talisman, their leader? How do they recover from that loss this season?
Well, as you said, from a sporting perspective, it's a huge loss. This is a guy who's been the talisman for that team over such a long period, essentially from the moment he arrived. He was the top scorer in all competitions in each of the last 5 seasons. So on the pitch, it's going to be felt. From an emotional standpoint, there is some discrepancy between how sections of the fan base feel about him, particularly with the way he's been linked with moves away over the past 2 summers.
With João Félix coming in, is there a sense that he is capable of replacing Griezmann? There was a similar fee spent on him than there was received from Barcelona for Griezmann, but obviously a player of far less repute, although had a fantastic season at Benfica last year, of far less experience. Who steps up here? Is it João Félix that scores the goals? Is there another player at the club that will step up and fill that sort of emotional void? Where does Atleti go here from here? Sorry.
I think João Félix is obviously going to be seen as the next star of that team, the next player who could be worth even more than €160 million in the future. But in the immediate future, I think it's probably going to be Diego Costa and Alvaro Morata. They're going to be expected to lead the line this season. But there's also more expected of Thomas Lemar in his second campaign, and he's had a good pre-season as well. So I suspect he will certainly be expected to contribute. But with Félix, I don't think there's any intention of the club to rush him. I think they certainly see him as a project to develop and maybe contribute along the way this term.
There was news today about this email that's been found that possibly suggests that a deal was done sort of as early as March with between Griezmann and Barcelona. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but is there a feeling that Griezmann's gone now, Atletico should move on, or is this really something that's still causing a lot of bitterness?
In the club, there's a lot of bitterness. There's also a financial aspect to it. The club would quite like to get the extra 80 million euros if they could from this situation. I think that's certainly what's driving it. But where the fans are concerned, I think they're sort of, there's a feeling that they're better off without the constant speculation away from the pitch that came with Griezmann, his entourage, the whole documentary situation last summer. I think there's a sense that whilst he was great on the pitch, he may have been becoming a bit of a distraction.
Is there a sense that this, although you talked about Griezmann being a distraction, is there a sense that the window overall has been positive, you know, with Griezmann leaving? You mentioned that sort of nuisance, if you like, of the ongoing speculation with Barcelona. How do you assess their transfer window as a whole? Do they emerge as an improved team overall when you look at their squad with Trippier and a number of other players coming in, Felix too, of course? Is there a sense that they could even kick on from here?
It's always difficult to say any club's had a good transfer when they've lost the best player. But in this instance, I do believe Atletico have done some stellar work, particularly rebuilding the defence. Renan Lodi is a player I really like the look of, and Trippier on the right is a good addition. What's interesting with both of these fullbacks, though, is that they're naturally attacking players, and we know Simeone is a defensive coach, and these players have defensive limitations. Spurs fans will tell you that better than anybody, but who better to coach them than Simeone? So I think the defence, whilst they've lost players, is certainly the positive to come out of this summer transfer window.
It's going to be really interesting to see how he does develop those sort of players, because it's been a common thread throughout Diego Simeone's reign that he sort of starts off as he did at the start of his career at Atleti with a very aggressive and conservative kind of style of team, and to expand and be more expansive, they've signed attacking players, and those attacking players haven't necessarily always worked out. Lamar didn't start particularly well, took time to bed in. There have been a number of others that have struggled to make an impact, and he sort of migrated back towards a more classic Simeone era, or a classic Simeone style. Is there a sense that this season is something of a make or break year if Griezmann does leave and that hole isn't easily filled, and they underperform compared to how they have previously? Is there a sense that this season could end Diego Simeone's reign at Atletico Madrid? Is it pivotal for his managerial career?
I don't think it's any more pivotal than last season was, particularly. I think we've got to look at the situation at Inter Milan, the place Simeone's always said he'd like to coach. They just hired Antonio Conte, and I think that's a long-term project there with Conte going. So I don't think there's a move away from Atletico anywhere on the horizon for Simeone. And I think last season, a lot of pressure was put on him and the team. There was a big recruitment drive in the summer. They got Thomas Lemar in, and they got Griezmann signed to the highest contract in club history. And they had the small matter of the Champions League final in their own ground. There was a lot of pressure on them, and it didn't work out. We essentially got a mishmash of players last year from the title-winning season they had and the new arrivals, and it just didn't work. This summer, we've seen a clean slate. A lot of those older players have moved on, and there's some new players, particularly in defensive positions, as we mentioned. And I think that certainly gives them a lot more to work with this summer. And I don't think there's any chance, even if it doesn't go well, that Simeone's going to be under any pressure in his job at all.
You mentioned Diego Costa, who obviously was in classic Costa form the other day. He scored 4 goals and got sent off against Real Madrid. How well received has that match been? Is it kind of discarded as a friendly, or a fan seeing it as some kind of sign that Atletico could genuinely sort of challenge for the title and maybe European trophy this year?
It's interesting. Covering both Madrid clubs, it's been seen as an absolute disaster by the Real Madrid supporters, and they see it as the sort of thing that conceding 7 goals to the nearest rivals, even in a friendly, is just something that cannot happen. Whereas Atletico are sort of a lot more cautious. They don't want to feel as if they're taking anything for granted. Yeah, it was a good result and they played well, but they realise that it was only a friendly. And it's not really been looked at. It comes from Simeone. They've moved on from that now, whereas Real Madrid are sort of stuck concerned about how that match went, and not dissimilar to how the UEFA Super Cup went last season.
Chris Winterburn of Marca, thank you very much. One to keep an eye on over the course of the year for sure. Jez, Thomas Lemar, we talked about players bedding in this summer, and it's going to be crucial for the way that for Atletico's medium-term future, short-term future as well. Lemar's second season, first half of last season, he was pretty pretty much on the fringes. Didn't hit the ground running as many would have hoped. He had a pretty poor last season at Monaco as well, very much in and out of the team, in and out of form, injury issues to some extent. Could this be the season that he proves to be the player that we all saw in that Monaco title winning season?
I think it could be. I mean, there's never been any doubt that he's a fantastic talent, really classy player on the ball. But he always kind of seemed sort of very shy, very in his own shell kind of thing. And I think if any manager or I think a move to Atletico and to Simeone was a perfect move for the making of him. It was going to go either way. Last season, as you said, sort of started slowly, but I think he did improve as the season went on. And I think it was exactly what you'd expect from someone playing under Simeone, developing a little bit more grinta, a little bit more defensive. I was going to say defensive nous, but also just willingness to go back and defend. Mm. And I think there were a couple of sort of late season France matches where Lamar made an appearance or two, and he already looked a better player, more involved, a little bit more sort of active and vocal. And hopefully, if he continues that learning curve, he could become again a proper fixture within the France squad and really make that left-sided position, which isn't sort of no one's really claimed it yet. He could really make it his own.
For sure. I think that'd be great to see, first of all, because when he was at Monaco, he was an extremely exciting, sort of very waspish, kind of intense kind of player, the way he sort of buzzed around coming in off that left-hand side. And it's really interesting because I think it's something that perhaps we don't take too seriously, perhaps, when players of his sort of stature, if you like, sign for an equally sizable club, arguably a much bigger club in Atletico Madrid, and the settling in process, the adaption, is something that takes longer at certain clubs. And Atletico, the way they play, you have to assume that settling in and learning the way Simeone plays and the way he goes about winning football matches is going to take longer than most. And we saw that with a little bit of Fabinho at Liverpool. He took a long time to really settle in. Wasn't even in the squad at one point, just settling in, I guess. And he's been fantastic in the second half of last season. Is there a case that we're just overlooking the fact that he needs time? He's still a young guy, just needs time.
I think so. I think it was Wenger who said that players need to be given something like a year, really, to acclimatise to a new league, a new country, a new team. And Lamar, I mean, he has travelled before. He came from Guadeloupe to a very early age to join Caen in the first place. But still, he does seem quite a timid character. And for him to move to a capital city elsewhere, learn a new language, yeah, it's true that we often forget that there's the human aspects to a move as well. It's not just the football.
Yeah.
So it was, of all players, I don't think Lamar was ever going to be the type who'd sort of hit the ground running, but one that you need to give time to. And obviously we always talk about how managers in particular aren't given enough time to sort of do their work with squads. I think it's true of players as well, and maybe we do expect a little bit too much too quickly from some players, especially star signings and multi-million purchases. But hopefully Simeone's and the Atletico fans' patience will sort of bear out with Lamar.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He really is the type of person that would struggle, perhaps, or at least you'd expect so, to struggle setting into a new city and a new job, effectively. Everybody that speaks about him at Caen and at Monaco has said that he's a quiet and sort of unassuming, kind of almost shy kind of character. And that kind of comes out in the way he plays to some extent. So I think there's an issue with us overlooking the fact that he needs to settle and him being the perfect type of character that would struggle to settle. So hopefully this season we'll see Thomas Lamar at his best. Very briefly before we move on, Kieran Trippier. 21 million, I seem to remember, from Spurs to Atletico. Obviously, they lost Lucas Hernandez over the summer to Bayern for considerably more. So we're talking sort of three or four times more. A good replacement, good business overall, I would imagine.
I don't think it's a bad replacement. I mean, I'm slightly biased. I think Hernandez is a little bit better. But then he's had his injury problems. Trippier, of course, had a fantastic World Cup, which possibly has accounted for this move maybe more than the last season. I know that Spurs' opinions of Trippier kind of plummeted as the season went on. But clearly there is a talented player there. Obviously, we've seen that he's got a good set-piece ability. We saw that in the World Cup semi-final. And he is the type as well that I think you can see why Simeone likes him. Like he's happy to sort of roam all the way up the flank and make his presence felt defensively and offensively. I don't know to what extent he's going to be a starter necessarily, but certainly a decent squad player to have.
Yep, Kieran Trippier, obviously at Atletico Madrid now, alongside Thomas Lemar, like you discussed, chats. We do hope he recaptures that form that he showed at Monaco. And what a lovely segue into the next section, because after this, we're going to be talking a fresh start for the Ligue 1 club. Love Sport. It's the Get European Football show on Love Sport Radio. The guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. Next up, it is Monaco.
Absolutely, a really interesting season for them coming up. Pretty tumultuous last time around. Leonardo Jardim obviously sacked, Thierry Henry brought in, and it went pretty terribly under Henry, and they sort of ended up begging Jardim to come back and rescue them, which he only just did. They might have got relegated under Henry. They were sort of trending in that direction and finished 17th in Ligue 1, considering their so recent title winners. It was a massive surprise, and this season is a pivotal one for them. And to discuss just that is Robin Berner of Goal.com. Hi there, Robin.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good, thanks, mate. What are the expectations for Monaco this season? After last year's disastrous campaign, what represents a good season for them?
Well, I mean, I think if you ask the board of Monaco, they'll be looking for Champions League football again. They've not invested particularly in the squad this year, which is quite strange considering how much they struggled last year, as you were saying. But they're definitely looking for second place, ideally. They want to be best of the rest behind PSG. But whether that's realistic is a completely different ball game entirely.
Is Leonardo Jardim the man to bring them that second place?
Well, I mean, we obviously saw at the start of last season that they really struggled badly at the start of last season, although they did get worse under Henry. The return of Jardim didn't really have the impact that they would have hoped. But, you know, we saw him, you know, perform, well, perhaps miracles. Yeah, I mean, I don't think miracles is too far-fetched to say, considering how far they got in the Champions League and also their Ligue 1 win. Yeah, I mean, I think he's the right man. He's done the job before. He knows the club. I think perhaps the issues with Monaco are as much to do with sporting director and transfers at the moment as they are to do with coaching and the on-field side of things.
How would you assess that sort of transfer side? Obviously, the Vadim Vasiliev, who is their VP and key for transfer negotiations and signings, previously left and he's been replaced. And obviously, Jardim was intrinsic to Monaco's transfer policy of recent years, and developing younger players, signing younger players, obviously, and selling them on for huge profits. How do you assess their transfer policy as it is? Because they sort of firstly went too far and ended up spending a lot of money on extremely young players who weren't really ready for the first team, and then almost went to the other end of the spectrum and were signing experienced players, and that seemed to be the way they were going. Have they found the right balance? It seems to be a bit of an up and down transfer window for them, and perhaps not the best so far. How do you assess that transfer policy going forward?
Well, I mean, if you look at this transfer window alone, I think it's been a poor one. You know, a team that's 17th in the league obviously needs to strengthen, particularly if they want to be playing European football the following year. And Monaco really haven't strengthened at all. If you look at their squad now, it's no better than it was when it finished last season. In terms of players that they've brought in, they've signed Gelson Martins from Atletico Madrid on a permanent basis. He's their sort of only marquee signing at the moment. They've obviously brought in goalkeeper Benjamin Lecomte from Montpellier, which is a really good addition. He's an experienced Ligue 1 goalkeeper. He's arguably been the best, or at least the most consistent Ligue 1 goalkeeper over the last two or three seasons. But they've not really brought anybody else in at all. As you were saying, they brought in far too many young players last year who just weren't ready for first team football. It was a sort of overly romantic view they had, or certainly overly ambitious in terms of what these players could produce. And then in January, they obviously signed the likes of Cesc Fabregas, Adrian Silva, Naldo, and they didn't really get a whole lot much more from them. So, you know, the transfer policy at the moment has really been shambolic since Campos left, or certainly since Vasiliev left. It's really been... there's been a plan there, but it's just been the wrong plan. And this summer, it doesn't seem like there's been any sort of plan at all. They've missed out on several targets, and they've not really improved their squad where it was clearly needed to.
One of the big disappointments last season, I thought, was Golovin, who had a very good World Cup for Russia, was seen as one of the sort of prize transfers of last summer. He, I thought, did very little for Monaco last year. Is the sense that maybe this year could be his year, or is he seen as one of those who perhaps, had they brought someone else in, could have been surplus to requirements?
Yeah, as you say, Golovin was huge hopes of him last year. Obviously, they beat Real Madrid to signing him, which it just shows how much of a coup that was. And he was really expected to be one of the players to drive them forward, both domestically and in Europe. And personally, I think he was one of the worst signings in Ligue 1 in terms of what he produced and how much he was bought for. This season around, you know, he could have been a player who was surplus to requirements for sure. However, they've decided to stick with him for another year. He's actually looked at improved form in pre-season, so there's optimism from that perspective, and I think that they probably feel that he can't really get any worse. Russians aren't necessarily known for travelling particularly well historically, and you know, he struggled initially. Another year in the country, another year to settle. He certainly had injury problems last year, which didn't help. So, you know, he can't get any worse. He's got to be better this year, and Monaco really need him to be better.
They do, absolutely. A really precarious situation there at Monaco. Robin Berner of Goal.com, thank you very much.
No problems, anytime.
Henri, we talked a lot about him before we came on, actually, and we talked a lot about him on the GFFN podcast over the last few seasons, and over last season, I should say. And you were very much in the camp that his reign and his exit was handled pretty poorly for Monaco.
Yeah, I think even Henri and his ego would admit that it wasn't a very successful time at Monaco. But I do think he was hamstrung somewhat by, first of all, he was working with the very poor squad that came in the summer. Mm. He had a lot of injuries to contend with. And I think that given the time that... given more time with the players who came in January, with the players who were returning from injury, I'm not going to say that he'd have sort of pushed them up the table into Europe or anything like that. But with hindsight, I don't think he'd have done any worse than Jardim. I think he would have kept them up and possibly higher than the 17th place and the real scraping survival that Jardim did. I'm not sure Jardim coming back was a great move. It seemed very half-hearted on the part of the club and Jardim himself. I don't think Jardim covered himself in glory in terms of sort of engineering Henri's sacking and his return. And I think he probably came to regret it quite quickly after. Not the fact that Henri was collateral damage, but the fact that he was back there. And as Robin said, there just doesn't seem to be any plan there. There's talk of replacing the policy of bringing young players in with instead bringing in experienced internationals. But as he said, they haven't done that yet either. Mm. I think the whole place is a mess. And to Henri's credit, at least there are a couple of players in Badiashile and also Masengo who looks on his way to Bristol City. That at least Henri can look back on his period and say, well, you know, at least I developed or blooded two or three really good young prospects. Whereas Jardim, so far, looking at his second period in charge, I'm not sure, obviously, just about keeping them up, but I'm not sure there's anything else that he can look back on with pride.
For sure. Yeah, it's a really interesting situation because it smacked of desperation bringing Jardim back a little bit. And when he left the first time, he didn't have the answers. They were in terrible form, they were slipping down the table, and they were playing very poorly. And I think they kind of had to get rid of Henri, and I think if he'd stayed, they probably would have got relegated the way results were going. Although he did bring through a number of good players, and Badiashile is a player I like a lot. But to go back so sort of forcefully to Jardim and almost sort of say, we were wrong, you were right, we're going to give you more power and let you return to the club, almost, you know, everything's forgotten, was a little bit desperate. And I don't know that he has the answers now. Then in the same way that when he left, it seems like they're in exactly the same situation. They were actually pretty fortunate even to stay up once Jardim came back, finished 17th, as Robin mentioned. And there was a period where they really did feel like he might still go down. So I think Monaco pretty much got away with one last season. But then you look at the size of the quality of their squad, it's very much, even though they haven't had a great summer, at times last season, especially after the winter additions, it was sort of one top six probably on paper in the league. So there's the material there, but perhaps just not the not the gumption of, from the manager and from the plans of the higher up, of the hierarchy to make it happen to some extent.
I think on paper there's a lot of quality there, but a lot of them are sort of on the wrong age of 30 or not yet fulfilling their potential. And the real concern is up front. Falcao, for all his, when he first arrived, it looked like he was a mercenary, but actually he's been a fantastic servant to Monaco. He looks on his way out, and there's no reliable goal scorers to replace him.
Yep, that is it for the first hour, gents, on the European Football Show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up after the hour.
This is Love Sport.
Yep, Get European Football Show on Love Sport Radio. Myself, Matt Beadle, joined by the guys from Get Football, Adam White and Jeremy Smith. We are on YouTube, so if you want to see it in live action, you can just search Get European Football Show on YouTube. If you want to join the debate, 0208 70 25 58, or get in touch with us on the socials at Love Sport Radio on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Quick bit of admin: the final score in the championship was Huddersfield 1, Derby County 2. Camille Grabara, the Huddersfield goalkeeper, adding to a list of goalkeeping misdemeanours in that one. He is Polish, which is a nice link because this is the Get European Football Show. We're not going to go to Poland now. We're going to go to Italy.
We absolutely are. Yes, a really interesting move for Moise Kean from Juventus to Everton, £27 million with a couple of add-ons. And here to discuss just that with me is Italian football writer Chloe Beresford. Hi there, Chloe.
Hi.
First, I'd love to get your thoughts on the player that Everton are getting. What type of player is Moise Kean, and what can Everton fans expect from him?
Well, first of all, I have to say that Everton fans should be really, really excited by this. He's sort of exploded onto the scene at Juve. He's obviously still very young. And, you know, it's been almost impossible for Juve to bring in, for young players to break into the team at Juve because they've got so much spending power on the transfer market. But Kean has found his place, and he's exciting, he's quick, he's skillful, he's a finisher. You know, he's really, you quite often hear about these bit hyped up young players, and you think, do they live up to expectations? But for anybody who watched him play for Juve, or indeed for Italy last season, he scored on his debut for Italy as well, and he is the player that everybody says he is. He really is fantastic.
That being the case, why are Juventus letting him go?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. I mean, you know, I was extremely surprised that the deal seems to have gone through without a buyback clause. It seems like a very un-Juventus-like move. They're normally really astute on the transfer market, but they, you know, with this one, they seem... it almost seems like, I mean, for them it's a good deal in terms of financial fair play because he came through their youth sector, so it's a pure profit on their books. But, you know, why didn't they hold out for a buyback clause? It doesn't make any sense to me, you know, that now he's just gone. He may never return, and they may really live to regret that because he is definitely a special player.
In terms of how special a player he is, this is like a massive statement signing for Everton. But would you have expected it being the case that he was going to move on, that he'd have gone to another Champions League team? Or does this kind of maybe step down in order to take a step up make more sense?
I think if it had been a loan move, I mean, they talked about Ajax at one point, which I know his agent has links with Ajax, and I think somewhere like that would have been ideal for him, sort of playing with other young players in that sort of exciting team and having some Champions League football. But I suppose in a way, like you say, taking that slight step down to make a step up, he's going to be a star and he's going to be adored at Everton. And I think that, you know, having watched him play and seen something of his character, I think he will thrive off that. He'll thrive off that adoration and the crowd behind him. And, you know, I really think he could push on even further because he's not, you know, he's not a player that's low on confidence. He doesn't look like he's young and inexperienced at all. He just plays with this sort of fearlessness, and I think he will shine there.
A potentially brilliant signing for sure. One we're really excited to see in the Premier League. Something else we'd love to get your thoughts on, Chloe, is Fiorentina. You're a big Fiorentina fan. A pretty poor season last year. What's the mood like at Fiorentina going into the new season?
Well, there's big changes after 17 years of ownership under the brothers Andrea and Diego Dalla Valle, that the fans were very, very unhappy with. They'd let the team stagnate. They were just treading water. They weren't really investing, and that all came to a head at the end of last season when, you know, unbelievably on the last game of the season they could have even been relegated because they had such a poor end to the season. But in have come some American investors, and they've bought the team. In fact, the main investor, Rocco Camusso, is actually born in Italy and moved to America when he was young. So he's got kind of a foot in both camps. He's got the traditions of Italy, but he's modern and forward thinking and bringing business ideas into the club. And there really is an increased level of excitement for next year. I think that there's a lot of optimism in Florence, and it could be a very interesting campaign next season.
Given that optimism, what would you say would represent a productive season from a Fiorentina fan's point of view? What can we expect for them in Serie A next year?
I think the aim is always to get into Europe. I think the absolute goal is to get back into the Champions League, like back in the day when Batistuta was so successful, going to places like Old Trafford and playing against Arsenal and, things that people remember from the past. And I think to restore to Fiorentina to that level is the ultimate aim. But I think they're a long way off that at the moment. And I think just to maybe make a return to the Europa League after a couple of really poor seasons would be something to shout about for the supporters.
Albon Affon has gone back to France on loan. He had a mixed season at Fiorentina, and before that you had Tatarusanu, who has done well at Nantes but is now at Lyon. Who's your goalkeeper now, and what's the feeling on the two that have recently left for France?
Tatarusanu was always a quite a mixed player. He had the capability to make some outstanding saves, but he also had quite a few dodgy moments and mistakes in him too. He was kind of seen as an average goalkeeper, but sometimes did let the team down. In terms of Lafont, I think it was a real shame because he came in with such a big reputation as, you know, I think the Italian press were calling him the French Donnarumma because he had that same kind of potential. But the circumstances last year behind the scenes were really awful, and with the ownership issue and, you know, obviously the year before the death of Davide Astori, it did, all those things in the background did have an effect on the team. And I think for him coming in and being the number one, and like you say, he had a mixed kind of season last season. He did make some outstanding saves, but there were mistakes as well. I think that affected his confidence, and I think for a goalkeeper that, you know, once that line has been crossed, it's very hard to pull it back if the fans have got no faith in you and you don't feel right in a certain place. And I don't blame him because it was a bad atmosphere last year. So we've actually now got Bartolome Dragowski, who started out at Fiorentina and was sent on loan to Empoli last year and made the headlines with a string of really, really excellent saves and almost kept Empoli in the division. So he's signed a new contract now and they're happy to go forward with him as the number one.
One thing finally, Claire, I'd love to get your thoughts on was something we've already discussed on tonight's show, the Pablo Dybala situation. How do you see that playing out? It seems that the Manchester United deal is off. Do you think Juventus want to keep Dybala? Did you think he ever wanted to leave? How do you see his future going forward?
I think Juventus, to be honest, are happy to sell him. He obviously had some three excellent seasons with Juve, saw some brilliant goals, free kicks. He was, you know, they gave him the number 10 shirt. He was really their star. But he when Ronaldo arrived, Ronaldo kind of wanted to occupy the same space that Dybala did. And he only scored 5 goals in Serie A last season. So he kind of played last season with his head down. He didn't react to it in a positive way. He didn't think, right, oh, I'm going to fight for my place. I guess when the person who's occupying that space is Ronaldo, it's very hard to think, well, I'm going to take it off him, because that's probably not going to happen. So I think Juve are quite happy to get rid of him. He obviously, it seems, didn't want to go to Manchester United, but I think he's still of the opinion that he's a huge star and he needs to be at a very, very top club like Real Madrid or Barcelona or somewhere like that. So I think Juve have got a problem on their hands, in fact, in the way that this is a player that they don't necessarily want. But, you know, is he going to accept a move elsewhere? It's a bit of a funny situation at the moment.
Yeah, really interesting situation. A potentially brilliant player for someone out there. Chloe Beresford, Italian football writer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers. We talked a lot about Moise Kean there. A potentially fantastic signing for Everton. Only 19. It was, as Chloe said, he was absolutely fantastic at times last season. Brilliant goal scorer, extremely confident. Shades of how Romelu Lukaku was when he was at Everton. That kind of marauding centre-forward, powerful, pacey, can finish. But one player of perhaps less repute that Everton have signed this summer that we wanted to talk about, we were talking before we came on air about him in particular. For those Everton fans listening, as Premier League observers, Dribble Sidibe seems to be close to joining Moise Kean at Everton. An equally good signing, do you think?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, it's strange because he's a reigning world champion.
It's true.
He won the World Cup last year with France. But, you know, we talked about Lamar earlier. We talked about Monaco. A lot of that title-winning team, their stock really has fallen in the last couple of years. And Sidibe is one of those players. It's not entirely his fault. He's had recurring knee issues. But his form really has dropped off quite substantially in the last couple of years. Possibly because he opted not to have an operation in the summer of 2018, just to get into the France squad. So, you know, I suppose he did a deal with the devil, and I'm sure looking back on his career and looking at his World Cup winner's medal, he won't be too put out by it. But I don't think he's the same player that he was. I'm not sure he was ever a great defender. Mm. But as a squad player, and certainly as a loan player who potentially could be signed permanently next summer for 14 million in today's market, that's not too bad for a very competent international player. So I think it's the more I think about it, the more I think it's a potentially good piece of business for Everton. But yeah, it's nowhere near as exciting as Kean.
For sure.
I really feel is, you know, possibly the biggest statement signing that Everton have made for a good sort of 15, 20 years.
Yeah, and considering the price as well, you know, they sold Idrissa Gueye to PSG for basically the same amount for Moise Kean. CDB, I think it might make sense. He could suit the Premier League. He's very attacking. He is good going forward. And if they wanted to play him even further up on that right-hand side, he could do that pretty well. And I think he had a good season at Lille, which is a long time ago. And obviously he was productive, at least, in that Monaco title-winning year. So there is a good player in there somewhere, but defensively seems to have dropped off the edge of a cliff. So a really interesting one, potentially, for Everton fans. Very briefly, before we move on, a quick look at the Get European Football Show Twitter, at GFootballEUShow. We've been running some Twitter polls on our Twitter page, discussing various topics that have appeared on the show tonight. And in that vein, that Moise Kean vein, were Juventus right to sell Moise Kean to Everton? Yes or no? 78% say no, of 773 votes. 22% say yes. So it seems pretty positive in that he's an extremely talented and potentially brilliant signing.
You look at sort of every test that was given to him from being, I think, one of the one or two youngest players sort of first ones born in the 21st century to make his debut, to last year filling in when Ronaldo was away. He scored a couple of important goals for Juve. As Chloe said, he scored in his debut for Italy. There's clearly a fantastic player there. And she mentioned that you know, that it's difficult for Dybala to live in the same space as Ronaldo. You wonder if there's a similar thing going on there. Ronaldo may be worrying about Keane becoming the real superstar of the team. There was obviously that racism incident as well, where Bonucci didn't really stick up for his teammate. So you can understand why Keane might be looking to move away, but I am surprised Juventus have let him go so easily.
Yeah, absolutely. And no buyback, which is extremely strange. That's what we thought was holding that move up. Everton going big in the transfer market. Moise Kean, Jean-Philippe Bamin coming in as well. Andre Gomez, of course, as well. Right, we're going to take a quick couple of minutes. We'll be back to discuss the Bundesliga.
Love Sport.
It's the Get European Football Show on Love Sport. We've got about 8 minutes or so left of the show. Delighted to say that we've got a caller. Josh is on the line, wants to discuss some of Spurs' transfer dealings during this transfer window. Josh, what do you want to put to the guys?
I wanted to sort of say how almost disappointed I am, I think, of our transfer window this season. I know we've broken our transfer record, but I think if you compare our window to the other top six teams, like sort of Arsenal, United, you know, the teams that missed out on Champions League last season, who are hoping to get back in it, if you compare their business to us, I think, you know, they're just so far superior this summer. Even a club like Arsenal, who are so many fortunate to bring in Nicolas Pepe and all these other big signings, I think we are going to struggle a lot next season. I'm hoping in the next 3 days you can bring in at least Lo Celso or Bruno Fernandes, as well as Ryan Sessegnon, I think, maybe a right back who we're linked to. But we need to do something, because I'm really worried that we're going to get to that window and our only two signings is going to be Ndombele and Jack Clark, who's back on loan.
It's a really interesting point. Just what do you think? A disappointing window for Spurs overall, or would you be happy with those signings?
I think it's a stronger window than last summer, and they didn't bring anyone in. I think you look at Liverpool, they haven't really brought anyone in of note. United, arguably, as things stand today, are a little bit weaker with brought Maguire in, obviously, but have lost a couple of midfielders. Tottenham were in a good position last year. Okay, finished third and some way back in the end from City and Liverpool, but they looked more viable challengers than anyone else, and they obviously got to the Champions League final, and I think they have strengthened this summer, possibly not as much as Spurs fans would like, but Ndombele really is a class act, and the fact that they beat a lot of other competition to get him is, I think, a real good sign on Spurs' part and on Levy's part. Lo Celso would be a fantastic addition to the team. I think PSG got rid of him far too quickly. But there's still a couple of days left to strengthen. But looking at the other teams at the top, I'm not sure that Spurs are that far, not behind, but I think that they've had a good window. Arsenal may be a little better, but Arsenal was starting from a lot further back than Spurs this summer.
Josh, mate, thanks so much for calling. We've only got a couple of minutes, so just before you go, any names that you'd like to see come in to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium before the window finishes?
Lo Celso, Sessegnon and Atal, the right-back from Nice, I believe.
Yeah, would be a good signing for sure.
Nice. Well, hopefully we'll have some news for you this time next week. Josh, thanks for your call, buddy. Really, really do appreciate it. That was Josh, a Spurs fan, wanting to know what the guys thought of Spurs' transfer dealings so far and who indeed might be coming into North London before the window finishes on Thursday night. Right, fellas, we're going to move quickly to the Bundesliga.
We are, yeah. Some football actually was played this weekend. We talked a little bit about the French Super Cup, but the German Super Cup threw up a really interesting result. On the line to talk Dortmund, Bayern Munich. Dortmund's 2-0 win over Bayern Munich is Stefan Buschko of ESPN. Hi there, Stefan.
Hey, Adam and Jeremy, how are you guys doing?
Very, very good, thanks, mate. What did we learn from this Super Cup result, this Dortmund 2-0 win? Does it spell a title race in the Bundesliga this season, do we think?
I mean, Borussia Dortmund have been a little bit more advanced in announcing that they actually want to win the championship for once, because usually they are very defensive about that sort of thing. But Borussia Dortmund have won the Super Cup before and then finished like 23 or 25 points off Bayern, so I'm a bit hesitant to read too much into that result.
Do we think that Bayern are a little bit undercooked coming into this season? I watched the game at the weekend and it felt like that they had a lot of possession and they had a lot of chances. It was pretty open, the game as a whole. And they were arguably the better side in the first half, but they lacked cutting edge significantly. is there a sense that Dortmund are just a better, well-rounded team given the two clubs at their current stages?
Yeah, I think for the start of the season that might actually be true. Bayern wanted to complete a lot more transfers on the transfer market than they actually have. I mean, there's this long whining chatter about the transfer concerning Leroy Sané, of course, and that would make all the difference with players like Franck Ribéry and Arjen Robben no longer there. And in midfield, they also have a couple of issues in central midfield. Thiago is pretty much the only one that really can help and give structure to that possession. And of course, they will miss Mats Hummels because he helped them, especially in the second half of the last season, a lot with their build-up play. And that factor is sort of gone. And yeah, Bayern, to me, looked, at least in the Super Cup, pretty unstructured. Their pressing was not very cohesive. So, yeah, there's still a lot of work to do in the next 2 weeks until the Bundesliga starts. I obviously don't know if Niko Kovac can mend that, but I think I would agree with the assessment that Bayern don't look at the best yet.
So, as you said, Robin and Ribéry have gone, two of Bayern's sort of long-term match winners, and Sancho obviously was the match winner, arguably, for Dortmund. Maybe not the greatest match overall, but a great goal and a fantastic assist. Is he the kind of player that's going to make the difference and push Dortmund to the title this year?
Yes, absolutely. He already had a very spectacular season last season, and I wrote about Sancho that he even... you know, does amazing things on a bad day. And I think that was certainly the case. He had two really great moments against Bayern. One resulted in a goal and the other one in a very spectacular assist. And this is sort of the thing that I think people can get used to by Jadon Sancho on a very regular basis. I think he was very consistent in his scoring output and assisting output in the second half of last season and often made the difference for Dortmund. So, yes, the team in general has a lot of difference makers, but I think Jadon Sancho will be leading the stats along with Marco Reus again.
Lucien Favre in his career has often sort of started excellently at a club, and then just because of his sort of intensity and the everything that he demands of his players, there's a bit of a drop-off in the second, third season. Are there any concerns about that at Dortmund, or is he sort of very comfortable in his position, everyone's happy with him?
Well, I think most people are happy with them. There are a couple of Dortmund fans that are a little bit disgruntled by his coaching style because he overall is a bit more defensive and conservative. And a couple of fans obviously prefer more, you know, heavy metal football since Jürgen Klopp, let's put it this way. But overall, I think the club is very happy with him. He recently extended his contract with any without any bells and whistles. I don't think there was a big announcement or anything, but... There's certainly trust in Lucien Favre, and as far as the falling out part goes, I think that always happened in the third season, so Dortmund fans can maybe look forward to another one good year before everything hits the fan.
Absolutely, a somewhat pernickety coach in his time at Gladbach in particular, but did fantastically at Nice too. One thing I'd love to get your thoughts on is if we talk Dortmund in isolation, how do you assess their transfer window? Deals done early, things sorted much ahead of their rivals. Are they best positioned to win the Bundesliga, and is this the best transfer window they've had for some time?
Yes, I would certainly think so. Getting Julian Brandt alone for 25 million is maybe one of the bargains of the entire transfer window, because Julian Brandt is a really great Bundesliga player, and it was actually quite surprising that Dortmund could get him. I thought that he would go to a bit more elite club. So that already is a big bargain, and he will help this team tremendously. Thorgan Hazard from Gladbach is also a superb addition. And let's not forget Nico Schulz, who is not the most prominent player, but he is a left back that really grew into, you know, a German international under Julian Nagelsmann and Hoffenheim. And he has already showed in the preseason so far that he will be an asset for Dortmund, who had a lot of defensive issues. And of course, Mats Hummels has quickly shown that the 30.5 million Dortmund paid for him to return from Bayern Munich is probably absolutely worth the money, even though he missed the Super Cup. His build-up play really put Dortmund ahead and sort of gives them a whole other dimension in the possession, really. Julian Weigl, who had a couple of good years under Thomas Tuchel, but then sort of fell off the wagon. He also is now back in the double pivot next to Axel Witsel just because of Mats Hummels, because there's so much more passing outlets that Lucien Favre is more comfortable in, and yeah, playing a very fluid style now from the back line throughout the midfield. And I think the transfer window was extremely crucial for Dortmund. I think they're ready to really challenge for the title this season. And also, I have to say that the team chemistry and the cohesiveness is really great. So Michael Zorc, the sporting director, has done an excellent job. The only slight criticism a lot of Dortmund fans have is that they don't really have a clear number nine forward. So that is maybe something to point the finger to, because Paco Alcácer is not, you know, the strong attacker like Lewandowski or so, who can hold the ball, but he has different skills. And the way Dortmund play with a very fluid attack, I don't think it's going
Stefan,
to hurt
Stefan,
them.
Stefan, it's been great for you to join us. Thank you very much. We're going to have to wrap up there because we've come to the end of our hour and a half on the Get European Football Show. Adam and Jeremy, it's been nothing but a delight yet again. Fabulous insight. We will be back again at the same time next week on Monday, 9 p.m. the Get European Football Show on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.